From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A face-off between Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton and Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, if not face-to-face. Trump followed Clinton in a discussion about the role of the president in foreign policy at an event hosted by NBC News' Matt Lauer, and it was clear that the gloves were off.
What you want in a president, a commander-in-chief, is someone who listens, who evaluates what is being told to him or her, who is able to sort out the very difficult options being presented.
You're talking about judgment.
Makes the decision. That's right.
You recently received two intelligence briefings.
Yes, I did.
Did anything in that briefing, without going into specifics, shock or alarm you?
Yes. What I did learn is that our leadership, Barack Obama, did not follow what our experts, and are truly, when they call it intelligence, it's there for a reason, what our experts said to do.
How?
And I was very, very surprised. In almost every instance, and I could tell, I have pretty good with the body language, I could tell they were not happy. Our leaders did not follow what they were recommending.
As expected, Hillary Clinton's emails played a prominent role in the conversation.
I have a lot of experience dealing with classified material, starting when I was on the Senate Armed Services Committee, going into the 4 years as Secretary of State. Classified material has a header which says top secret, secret, confidential. Nothing, none of the emails sent or received by me had such a header.
Hillary Clinton, with her emails that nobody's ever seen, where she deletes 33,000 emails, and that's after getting a subpoena from Congress. If you do that in private business, you get thrown in jail.
For more on that, we spoke with Margaret Kimberly, who writes a column at BlackAgendaReport.com weekly entitled Freedom Rider. She's on hiatus as she finishes up a book she's been writing, but we spoke with her about the presidential campaign.
So no column, but lots going on, and I assume you're plugging away at your book.
Yes.
Good.
I am, and I'm observing the presidential election, and pretty much interested in Hillary Clinton, who I believe will win, I think, despite her problems. But there's a huge issue looming for her that ought to be of greater interest to the press and to people who call themselves progressives, and that is her email issue, which falls into two categories. One, the fact that she had used a private server as Secretary of State, that she commingled personal and State Department emails. That should be a scandal in and of itself,
right.
But I think the ruling classes have decided she should be the president, and they are assisting her in trying to minimize the seriousness of this situation. The other email issue is the leaking of DNC, Democratic National Committee, that is, emails to WikiLeaks, and what they revealed about the workings of the Democratic Party. So she's got two email problems, and they've come up with a novel way to try and disappear what is what should be a big story. And one is to blame Donald Trump and the Russians. The other is to blame WikiLeaks.
Right.
So we see this full-blown effort to say that there were Russians were first it was just or well first it was a guy known as Guccifer,
right,
who is a Romanian.
Right.
Then suddenly he turned into a Russian.
Right.
Then suddenly it wasn't just ordinary Russians; it was some guy in a cubicle next to Vladimir Putin's office,
right,
who was in charge of the WikiLeaks, the documents that came into the hands of WikiLeaks.
Right.
And this, of course, serves to just to discredit anybody who raises the questions,
right,
about the DNC. They revealed, among other things, It was pretty shameful stuff. The DNC went out of its way. It's supposed to be neutral, but they went out of their way to, in any way that they possibly could, discredit Bernie Sanders and destroy his campaign. Now, I find it interesting because I don't believe Sanders ever had a chance to get the nomination.
Yeah.
But they took no chances, and they did things like they used internet trolls to attack his supporters online. They were going to use the Craigslist website and make it look as though someone from the Donald Trump campaign had placed this sexist classified ad for female employees. They planned to use Sanders' religion, the fact that he was Jewish, and making assumptions that people in certain parts of the country wouldn't vote for a Jewish person. The emails revealed how the then chairwoman of the DNC reached out to the press if there were any stories she didn't like, in MSNBC in particular, where she demanded changes in coverage. So they did a number of things that were so embarrassing the chairwoman had to step down and other staffers were fired. And rather than allow any attention to be focused on the content of this information, they turned it into Russians trying to meddle in the American campaign. And we keep being told they're Russian digital fingerprints, whatever that means, in this case, which prove that, you know, Vladimir Putin is behind it, who's been demonized so thoroughly. All you have to do, apparently, to get out of trouble in the U.S. is just to say Vladimir did it.
Yeah, right.
So that is the first thing. And there are a lot of things Democrats themselves should be angry about. One of the things that the WikiLeaks documents revealed is that the Democratic Party routinely deprives candidates down ballot in state and local races, deprives them of money. All the money goes to the presidential candidate, in this case Hillary Clinton, which explains why, part of the reason why Republicans do so well around the country in state legislatures, and Democrats then pretend to care about it and blame the Koch brothers and Alec and so forth, when it's the Democrats themselves who deprive their own people of the financial help they need to win elections. So this is all covered up, and the blame that should be directed at Democrats is directed at Donald Trump and at Russia and at WikiLeaks. So the New York Times last week does this huge story on Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, yeah, and says that WikiLeaks works generally benefits Russia. And WikiLeaks has exposed things about Russia, too, about governments all over the world, but they're not going to give any attention to that at this point. So it's all about covering up to help Hillary Clinton become president, and not to examine these issues. And the second is about her use of a private server as Secretary of State, which was unusual in and of itself. That says a lot, too, about her continued involvement with the Clinton Foundation, where she should have recused herself when she became Secretary of State, and but she did not. And the efforts to hide those connections.
You know, there's a particularly scary thing about the first part of that, which, you know, if your assumption that Clinton is going to be president, it bears out, could mean essentially the propaganda war for World War III is already being, you know, the ground for it is already being laid.
Oh, absolutely. They, you know, she can't wait to have her own war anyway, and Obama has laid the groundwork for that with his continued efforts to disrupt the Russian government. The goal is of the United States is to get Vladimir Putin out of power, which they can't do, and they will only serve to screw up something very terribly. such as putting troops, 30,000 NATO troops on Russia's borders, continued sanctions, and so forth. So it dovetails very nicely for her to try to blame Russia for everything. But it also, as president, the lengths she has gone to hide her activities is very dangerous, because when she becomes president, she could be impeached, or she could be sidetracked by this endless scandal. I mean, if we have a scandal starting, she didn't even go into office yet. So she's in significant legal trouble. I believe she would, like her husband, do something very dangerous to distract. Remember when he was undergoing his impeachment, he decided to bomb what turned out to be an aspirin factory in Sudan, claiming it was it was a chemical weapons factory. In fact, no, they made aspirin,
right.
Killed several people, destroyed this building for no reason. And whether it was deliberately used to cover up, whether it was a case of someone who was under pressure who should not have been making major decisions. But that's the sort of thing that I foresee when she, I believe she will become president when she becomes president. And the bizarre stories about her emails, that she had this private server in the basement of her home in Chappaqua, New York, that there were State Department employees who did not know she had a private email server. Her email address did not say clintonemail.com, so people did not realize that they were emails were going to and coming from a private server. The fact that she had staff destroying her cell phones, it was revealed last week one of her staffers destroyed her cell phones with a hammer. Now, that's the sort of thing that when I hear it, I said to myself, well, who destroys a cell phone with a hammer? And I'm thinking, you know, terrorists and drug dealers,
right.
and apparently the Secretary of State, too. There was an effort to try to switch emails from a laptop, and they claimed they sent it somewhere, but it never got where it was supposed to be. And all this time I'm thinking, doesn't the State Department have an IT person or an IT department?
Yeah, well, apparently, yes, they pled the fifth, apparently.
It was both amateurish, and it also just stinks to high heaven. And it's clear she was hiding. She, as Secretary of State, continued to do the work of the Clinton Foundation, which is not really a foundation. It was more influence peddling. People all over the world paid a lot of money to Bill and Hillary Clinton to get certain things done. This was no foundation in the traditional sense. And that's what she's covering up. She deleted emails after she was subpoenaed. Now, that's against the law, to destroy evidence once you've been subpoenaed.
That's right.
So, but she also gets away with it because the only people after her are Republicans. The organization Judicial Watch, which is a right-wing organization, has gone to court numerous times, and so now she has to answer questions, not directly, but by email, to them. So it's the sort of thing liberals use to say, you see, it is a vast right-wing conspiracy against her. And it is, but it is something that should be of concern to everyone. And unfortunately, it is not.
You know, when you take a civics class, to the extent they have them anymore, I think they're available to, like, people working on their doctorates at this point. And nobody else. One of the things that, and law school also, you know, they teach you that the adversarial system is one that by its nature helps to keep things honest. They describe the boards of elections that way. Oh, yeah, we have two commissioners, a Republican and a Democrat. The Republican makes sure the Democrat can't steal the election. The Democrat makes sure the Republican can't steal the election. And so this tension is lauded as a, as a check on power, basically, as a check on corruption as well. Yet, when there's a discussion about this criminal activity that is clearly documented in, you know, thousands of places, it's a right-wing conspiracy going to the motive of the people that are bringing it to light, or it's Putin rather than going to the essence of what's being disclosed, the acts mm-hmm. that are being described, which are clearly criminal. You know, there's a point in time when this election nonsense is going to be over, and Clinton is either going to be president or not. I assume she's quaking in her boots over the possibility of a Trump-appointed attorney general looking into the matter after the election. But you may well end up with a Republican House of Representatives or perhaps a Republican Congress altogether like we have now. And certainly the investigations will continue. I'm sure you remember, I remember 1972, when Watergate was looming over Nixon. He won by a landslide, and he was gone in a year and a half. And not much else happened. And we ended up with Gerry Ford out of the House of Representatives as president. And I'm wondering, for example, if we could end up with Paul Ryan as president in a year or two if Hillary Clinton ends up there. In the event that that she becomes president and is deposed, you know, we've got Kane in the number two position and then Ryan behind him. And Kane was the head of the DNC 8 years ago. I'm sure he has plenty of stuff that might compare to what Agnew had under his belt when he was ushered out the door. So, I don't know, looking at all this stuff play out, what do you see as a, I don't know, just there's a general environment in Washington.
Well, I've said to myself, you know, should she have to resign, perhaps we should be taking a closer look at Tim Kaine and, you know, that he could end up as president. Should she have to resign? I've had the same thought about Nixon, that we'll have a replay of what happened with Nixon resigning in 74. So and then him choosing a vice president that none of us knows anything about. So with, as you say, Ford and Agnew, I'm sorry, Nixon and Agnew both having to step down, we ended up with an unelected president and vice president at that time. But the danger is, so that's danger is still out there. But there's a bigger question, too, that there was no effort for by the Democrats to look at anybody other than Hillary Clinton. And it was her turn. She had this battle for the nomination with Obama in 2008. And it was just widely decided among Democrats it was her turn and that she was going to run again. It seems that nobody asked, should she run again? Is she the best candidate? So it was left to someone like Bernie Sanders to decide for himself that he would challenge her for the nomination, and he did, I think, better than even he thought he would. So it goes to a bigger scandal about the ruling classes deciding who is and isn't going to be president, that there was no effort made even among, that there was this total capitulation even among Democratic politicians to say, wait a minute, who says it has to be Hillary? Shouldn't we put out feelers for other people? Shouldn't other people step forward? But this total capitulation to her, as if she was this great candidate, which she is not. And so we're, Democrats are stuck with this very deeply flawed candidate who has tremendous ethical issues and perhaps will have in the future tremendous legal issues. Should be very disturbing to Democrats, but they have been silenced as usual and their general way of doing things is very simple. Well, the Republican is so horrible, and in this case, it's Donald Trump, and so all you have to do is say the word Trump to shut people up. Well, you don't want Trump to be president. No, I do not want Trump to be president, but I don't want Hillary Clinton to be president either. And she is, she represents all the worst of the Democratic Party. We have, as Glenn Ford says in Black Agenda Report, he calls it the big nasty tent for Hillary Clinton, which puts everybody under it except for the most right-wing Republicans. So Wall Street is in favor of her. People who generally think of themselves as liberals or progressives are in favor of her. The corporate media are behind her. And that means if you stand for If you stand for everything, you stand for nothing. So progressives are worse off than they have ever been before. She has no incentive to push a progressive agenda at all, because if anybody asks a question about anything, the response is, do you want Trump? Do you want Trump? So everybody has silenced themselves or in a panic chosen to support her. So she will eviscerate what little is left of the progressive agenda. And this is going to be another conservative administration with a D behind the name. So unfortunately, I think most, even some people who supported Bernie Sanders, will still end up supporting her.
You know, the discussion, the discourse has centered on emails, Trump's psyche, you know, Clinton's server, Trump's taxes, just about everything except for public policy, which is supposed to be the objective of political activity, to ascertain and implement public policy. And people are supposed to engage in the political process to actualize their own desires, needs, ideas in policy through the representatives. And yet, the general discourse about public policy in the United States is at an almost infantile level, generally, just in the background. Politics is presented as personal to the politicians, and scandals and shots of former congressional representatives' crotches and, you know, whatever. The mechanical processes of policy selection, policy implementation, measurements, the sciences of all of the things that support it are barely taught at the university level outside of like JFK School of Government or something, let alone in high school like it used to be. And yet, it looms over the election in a major way. The dissatisfaction of the masses of working people in this country that's, you know, exemplified among other ways by the support for Sanders, the support for Trump, and the support for people in the streets is the result of the lack of actualized policy, or the result of the policy imposed upon the bulk of the people in the country. And among that, you also have foreign policy with the current president and Hillary Clinton. You know, we're engaged in a world war, whether people characterize it or not that way.
Yes.
In multiple theaters, engaging millions of people, impacting tens of millions of people. There is a distinction in policy between Clinton and Trump, for example, on that question, among others. How do you get that into the public discourse?
Well, it's hard. It's difficult to do when the corporate media picks sides the way they do. They always do. And they have chosen their side, and it's Hillary Clinton. Now, Trump deserves some of the aspersions cast against him when he started running. First of all, it just seemed ridiculous that this man known as a self-promoting real estate developer who knew how to use the media with reality shows and so forth. First of all, it just seemed laughable that he was running for president at all.
Right.
But then it turned out that the Republican base wasn't interested in the Republican candidates.
Right.
And his promotion of xenophobia, his comments against Muslims, his comments about immigration, where he suggested that, well, he didn't suggest it, he said Mexicans are, you know, the immigrants were all rapists and murderers. And he was rightly criticized for, for statements like that. So that has allowed I say the ruling classes, because that's who they are, to just continue to dismiss him and to promote and protect Hillary Clinton, no matter what is revealed about her, and to dismiss anything he says on any subject. So his foreign policy makes a lot more sense than hers. It is time that somebody says, why are we in NATO? What is NATO? Why do we need NATO 25 years after the fall of the Soviet Union? He puts it in terms, I do not, his anti-NATO statements. Is, you know, it's we're paying too much and other countries don't pay enough, which is not my criticism of an organization that I think just should not exist at all. But what's wrong with criticizing, with questioning NATO? What's wrong with saying that Russia and the United States don't have to be enemies, that we can and should have good relations with the Russian government? So, but now anything he says is on any subject, no matter how much sense it makes, is dismissed out of hand. And he has now been used as this boogeyman to shut up anybody on just about any subject. I mean, if you look at the way, essentially all Trump said was, I think that I could have a good relationship with the Russian president. Well, what's wrong with that? Right. Vladimir Putin just, he didn't endorse Donald Trump. He just said he is a personality, a big charismatic personality is the translation. That's all. And instead, it's been turned into this Trump-Putin love fest, and Putin is horrible, and so that means Trump is horrible, and, you know, Putin is hacking emails, and so on, and so on. It goes on and on and on, and the Trump aide did work for the former president of Ukraine, but tried to convince him to pull away from Russia, but that's never part
right.
of the narrative.
Right.
So all of these things are used over and over again to convince people to just dismiss him out of hand, and also to hang on to Hillary with the death grip. And if you're going to question both of them, the solution to me seems to be, let's look at third and fourth parties.
Right.
Let's look at other parties. But that's never part of the narrative. Anything about, for example, Jill Stein and the Green Party, if they're paid any attention to at all, it's always something negative or just a lie that she's anti-vaccine. She's a physician, for God's sake. She's
right.
an MD. She's not
right.
against vaccines.
Right. She
or
went to med school.
Apparently
yeah.
there was some mistake and she flew to Cincinnati when she should have flown to Columbus, and that was the big story. Ah, she doesn't even know where she's going. You know, I'm sure it's a mistake on the part of a staffer, but it's the sort of thing that the press would cover up if she was somebody they liked.
Right.
They would never tell you about it.
Or follow them to the wrong flight as well. And by the way, she doesn't fly on a private plane like the rest of them do.
Yes, that's
no.
true.
She's out there engaging with the airlines, and anyone that's ever been on tour for more than a week, and Jill's been out for a year and change now, understands that you're walking around staggering in a fugue state practically most of the time because you're going from place to place to place to place all day when you're supposed to be sleeping.
Yes, absolutely. Of course. That's, you know, the obvious explanation, but why give the obvious and logical explanation when you have another bullet in the gun to use against
right,
her.
Right, exactly.
So this is where we are. This is a sorry state of American politics where one person has been, in part because of the things he said, has been labeled a fascist. But Hillary Clinton is Hillary Clinton is the one who's actually killed people, lest we forget. She is the one who destroyed the nation of Libya. She is the one who followed her husband's policy of encircling Russia. She is the one who is, she and her boss, Barack Obama, are responsible for the destruction of Syria. So she is the fascist. She is. And the whole system is fascistic, if not outright fascist. And that's something we should be discussing rather than pointing fingers at the low-hanging fruit of an ill-spoken man that Donald Trump is.
So are we going to be seeing a column at blackagendareport.com next week?
Yes, we will.
Okay,
I'm not sure about what yet, but we will say we will have to take a little break. But I'll be back in the issue that next Wednesday, September 14th.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com, Freedom Rider, and we'll be looking for that next week. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.